Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First. It's November 3rd, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here with us. Yesterday, I recorded a show with at least the top story as part of this, and then it kind of got into a felt like a weird rambling mess about TV rights and video rights and what all that means. And I listened back to it a little bit at the end because I couldn't even believe what I was saying about it. It's like, you know what? Scrap the whole thing. Let's just come back at this tomorrow and try to do it the right way. So we are essentially re-recording part of this show for today, but at least it'll hopefully make a little bit more sense. So, thank you for the patience. I appreciate it. We're presented by our friends at Swanee's Golf. Check them out at swanees.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25, GolfNewsNet25, and get 25% off that first order. They have awesome stuff for fall. I'm enjoying some of the stuff from fall, especially hoodies. It is hoodie season. I'm so excited about it. I will quickly get over fall as soon as the clocks go back over the weekend, but at least for now, I am a fan of fall. Nice to have a little bit of cool weather around here. But use that promo code GolfNewsNet25 at swanees.co and save some money. Get looking great for the fall and winter, for that matter, because winter is coming. All right, so first story for today is the same one that we tried to record yesterday, although it was a little bit fresher yesterday morning. So let's take it back a little bit. Wednesday night, I was watching the End of the World series, and I was watching a little bit of news coverage about the death of Bob Knight and posting the video of his hilarious outtakes from this golf series that he did in like the 80s or early 90s, whatever it was, called Golf Your Way with a PGA professional named Sam Carmichael. I put it on my X or Twitter. It's this great video that's like floated around over the years from E-Bombs World, which used to be just the best of places on the internet. And it's about 9.5 minutes of just outtakes from the show, and it is absolutely wonderful. Everything is great. So check that out. We have a chance. But really wasn't paying attention to golf proper. And someone was, and I think the folks at Nuclear Golf found this first, so I'll give them the credit for it, even though I don't care for nuclear golf. And all they do is typically aggregate other people's stuff and then call it theirs, which I think is obviously crappy. But they did find something. They went to the TGL website and they realized that Jon Rahm wasn't on it. His likeness, his name, anything referencing him had been removed from the website. And Jon Rahm's tweet from basically a year ago, almost a year ago, when he was announced as an initial, I believe, investor, but at least an initial commit to the concept, one of the first commits to this concept, that was gone. That tweet was gone. And there were obviously some immediate swirling questions. Why did this happen? Is he out of TGL? Is he going to live? Because there have been some rumors about that. And if you'll remember Brandel Chamblee, then you might not remember what, anything Brandel says, so maybe that's not the best phrasing. But Brandel kind of talked about, and I don't even remember where this was or where I heard it anymore, but he talked about players that he might be kind of worried about going to live, and Jon Rahm being one of them because Rahm and Mickelson share an agent, and Rahm's still pretty close to, or relatively close to, Sergio Garcia, and those types of things are kind of, I guess, red flags in a world where you're looking for them, but not to normal people in normal situation. So of course, you know, the live people, the live bots are out, and they're going, "Ah, oh, here he comes, we got him," you know, all that stuff. And then in the morning, TGL first acknowledges, yeah, he's not going to play. And they put out a statement. And their statement said, quote, "John is one of the most talented players in the game, and we will miss him during the inaugural TGL season. We understand that players have to balance a lot of different facets of their professional and personal lives and respect John's choice and wish him well." And then, you know, another half hour goes by, and then Rahm puts out his own statement, put it on X, and I'm sure on IG, but I didn't check there. And his statement read, "I am sad to confirm that I will not be participating in the first TGL season. While I still think it's a great opportunity, right now it would require a level of commitment that I can't offer. Best of luck to everyone involved, and may the best team win." And I think those two statements taken together should tell you he's probably not going to live. That would be a significant change from what I know, what I've heard, what I've seen, in, you know, all those different things. Whether I've heard it secondhand, whether I've read it or heard it in public, all those types of things. It is very unlikely that this means anything other than I just got a lot of stuff to do. And that's the way I'm taking this, taking those two statements. Because first of all, Rom said, I'm going to miss the first season. The TGL statement said, inaugural season. So he could come back for year two, assuming there's a year two. And I'm not sure on this, but I had heard that he is an investor in the concept. So if he's got an equity stake, then at some point he's probably going to want to get in the mix. But if you think about it for Rom, there's a lot of demands on his time. And when he committed to this concept a year ago, things were different for him. He only had one child at the time, if I remember right. He's a father of two now. He's the Masters champion. A lot of demands on your time for that. A lot of money to be made being the Masters champion that doesn't involve having to play golf. And so that changes things. He's effectively trying to kind of prop up the DP World Tour in part, but with membership, and I'm sure they've kind of leaned into him a little bit for the future. He also lives in Arizona, and TGL's played in West Palm Beach, Florida. So every time that he would play a match and be a part of it, and you would assume he would play in all of them because he's the headliner, that he would have to play and he would have to fly from Arizona to Florida for something in the evening. And he could fly right back home. I mean, he's got the money, he's got the means. That's not the problem, but it's the inconvenience. And I'm sure there's probably somebody in his family said to him, you shouldn't do this. You are a dad. You are a husband. You need to be that. And you need to find time to be that more than you need to find time to play screen golf on ESPN. No offense to TGL, but that was kind of the question with this entire concept was how are you going to ramrod in more commitments for these players, even if it's just a couple of hours on a Monday or Tuesday night or what, Monday night, whatever it is. Even that is still time. That's time away. And when you spend 25 weeks of the year, 20 to 25 weeks of the year on the road as it is, those hours that you're not on the road are more meaningful. So I think that's where Rom's coming from here. I don't think it has really anything to do with Liv. I really don't. I would be shocked if it did. That would be a big change. So don't take it that way. But this is, this kind of thing was going to happen. Certain people were going to walk away. And there still could be more. There still could be more people go, you know what, I just can't do this. But I think at this point, you've probably run pretty dry of the people who could do that because outside of Tiger and Rom and Rory McIlroy, you didn't have as many early commitments. So really, the early commits are the only ones who can kind of say, you know what, I don't have time for this. I can't do it. And I think what will happen here is if everything goes well this first season and there is a second, and I'm sure there will be a second, but if everything goes well, then Rom will say, okay, now I'm willing to hop in. I'm ready to jump in now and do that. They don't have a sixth team yet. They have five geographic-based ownership groups. So you've got New York, Boston, Atlanta, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Supposedly, there's a Chicago one that might be coming, or at least there's kind of a pitch to that, but they haven't secured that enough to tell the public about it. I think that would probably make the most sense. Chicago's a huge golf city. So, maybe I don't know who the celebrity investor would be or kind of the public investor would be behind the concept. I mean, each team kind of has that in some fashion, some public name, but maybe it's I mean, you could throw out a really random name and go, the Obamas could be interested. I mean, they've got some money. Maybe they're part of it. Who knows? I don't know. We'll see. But they've got to announce a sixth franchise. And in the meantime, they are announcing players committing to different teams. So Justin Thomas was the first. He was announced to be a part of Atlanta Drive GC, which is kind of an ironic name given the traffic in Atlanta. But nevertheless, he's part of that team. And then Colin Morikawa is part of the Los Angeles Golf Club. And they did some truly cringy content in trying to announce that, where they had Alexis Ohanian, I always mess up his last name, Serena Williams' husband, the co-founder of Reddit, He's one of the lead investors on this concept, along with Serena. And they had a video shot very professionally of the video call between Alexis and Colin Morikawa. And Colin Morikawa goes on the speech about, I've gotten calls like this, but never one like this. I'm super excited, kind of comparing it to the Ryder Cup, doing a little bit of a Taylor Gooch at LIV Portland, which was very bad. And then they've got a film crew filming both of them, so it's supposed to make it seem like it's off the cuff, like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. But if the film crew's at your house, then you know what's happening, or at least you got a really good idea what's happening. So that was not very good content. Hopefully they will not repeat that. And then they announced the full team for the Boston team, which is called Boston Common. Actually, I have a logo I quite like, which is a ball frog, a frog with a ball for a golf ball for its chest, and it's named after Boston Common, the park. The ball frog is named after the frog lake in Boston Common. So the whole idea of TGL is this, the branding, it's for everybody. It's not just for golf fans. It's for everyone to be involved and enjoy. So the common idea works. I think that's, I'm cool with that. But the team there is Rory McIlroy, noted Boston aficionado, Keegan Bradley, who's from New England, Adam Scott, who lives in what, Switzerland or Sweden or whatever, and Tyrrell Hatton is that team. Which I'm not saying Tyrrell Hatton's Irish, because he's not, he's English, but he does have a temper, and I'm Irish, that would be associated with an Irish American at times. So I think you could kind of put your arm around Tyrrell Hatton and be like, you can be a makeshift Irish guy. Adam Scott does not strike me as that. He's the complete antithesis of Tyrrell Hatton. Total opposite. So I'm interested in why he got picked for this team, but it's interesting at least. They've got a team. They've got one full team out there. And they're trying to do this drip, drip, drip to try to get information out there and keep things moving, because it's less, I mean, it's 2 months and 6 days until the first event. So there's not tons and tons of time to get all this stuff out there. They're quickly building the venue. They've got to do that pretty quickly. I mean, they've made some good progress on it. Alexis tweeted a picture, I think, the other day, maybe it was earlier in the week, driving by what it looks like an enormous tennis bubble, basically. At least from the outside, like the dome part of it. It's not going to be, obviously, a fully fledged dome stadium type thing. That would take years to build. That would never get done. So they've got this bubble concept that they've produced, and we'll see what it looks like when it's there. I'd actually like to kind of go see a taping of it, or a show of it. I'd be interested. So maybe we'll try to pull that off. But that's all the TGL news. John Rahm's out. We got a team. Got two guys on other teams. So they've got to announce a new 24th player, whoever that's going to be. I don't know who. I can't imagine it's on the same caliber of John Rahm. I don't think so. I mean, I'd be surprised if it were someone like Scottie Scheffler, but in that kind of vein of elite player. Maybe you could pull someone out of retirement. I don't know, but they've obviously got current players plus Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, and Rory's very current, but Tiger's not. So the idea here being, you want to keep the stars of today engaged, plus Tiger Woods, because he's the draw. So I don't know who else you could get, but we'll see who that person is in due course, I suppose. We'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back right after this, after a word from our sponsor. If you're like me, you've wanted to buy gold for years. Lots of commercials out there, but who can you really trust? I don't want a bad investment, but didn't want to miss the boat either. Sound familiar? Fortunately, I've got great news. If you have an IRA or 401k and want to buy physical gold, eliminate fear and uncertainty from the process using the new Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist. It helps you evaluate and choose the best gold IRA company. I used it personally to vet Augusta Precious Metals, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Use this checklist to choose the best gold IRA company. Text to get your free Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist today. Text GOLF to 68592. Again, text GOLF to 68592. That's GOLF to 68592. Or go to augustapreciousmetals.com. All right, second story for today. We're going to talk about the first round of the Worldwide Technology Championship. which is still not completed yet. They're going to finish it this morning in Los Cabos, Mexico, at El Cardenal at Diamante. And that is the first Tiger Woods design to host a PGA Tour event. It's a resort course down Los Cabos, down in Baja, Mexico. If you're kind of looking for a geographic hint about where this thing is, it's beautiful. It's amazing. I've played not this resort, but in this part of Mexico, TPC Danzante Bay. What was that, like 5 years ago, 4 years ago? Incredible part of the world in terms of the views, just unbelievable. But the word going into the week was that this golf course was going to get beat up pretty bad by the pros for the obvious reason that it's a resort course. Resort courses are made to be not completely easy, but they're meant to be confidence inspiring because they want you, as the resort guest, to have a great time. They don't want you to be mad that you play terrible and then not spend any money at the resort the rest of the time because you're so huff and puff about stinking it up on the golf course. And they also want it to be good enough that you come back and play more. So there's got to be a balance there in modern architecture of beautiful views, incredible conditioning, but pretty easy. So that you go, man, that was such a great golf course. I shot my best score there ever. And the views were amazing. And look at these pictures. And I'm not mad at all that I spent $350 to play this round of golf. And then you come back and you do it again. That's the whole idea. Or you tell two friends and they come and do it instead. So the word going into the week from the pros was that the scores were going to be low. It was going to be, you know, the fair Tiger Woods architecture. We don't have a lot of examples of it, but the ones that we do have, Woods is very keen on having wide fairways. He wants to give the average player, a normal player, lots of opportunity to build confidence, lots of reason to feel good about themselves because he just doesn't want to be a punishing architect. While at the same time, offering wide fairways and a lack of rough and large putting surfaces, he also makes it very specific for a better player where he wants you to put the ball. You could put it anywhere, but he wants you to put it in a specific place and then creates hole locations and putting surfaces with those hole locations. Lots of funnel pins. He loves a good funnel pins. He's talked about that forever. So that's obviously shown up in his architecture. And he likes big greens. Again, wants the amateur player, the recreational player, to hit a lot of greens, but he wants the professional to hit something more precise. Pros can do that. So the round one results reflect that. The first round just completed as we're recording this, so they've now officially started round two. But Cameron Percy is the round one leader. He shot 10 under 62. It's a par 72 course, about 7,452 yards, I think, is the exact yardage on the card. Bunch of other guys shot 8 under. Michael Kim, who actually tweeted about his impressions of the course, he's not a big course architecture guy, but shared some very similar thoughts. Camilo Villegas, Nate Lashley, and Tanner Gooia are all 8 under par 64. Then you've got a bunch of 65 sitting there as well. Jeffrey Kang, Cramer Hickok, Justin Lauer, Matty Schmid, Cam Young, and Matt Kuchar. And then you got a bunch of guys at 66. I mean, of the players in the field, wow. The current projected cut line is -3 because 72 players shot 69 or better of 132 in the opening round. It's probably going to be much lower than that in the end. It's probably going to be 4, 5, or 6 under in the end. Might even be 7 under, which would be a record on the PGA Tour. So we're threatening that kind of cut line in terms of performance, a record low. And the sports books are going to probably get clobbered on this. The ones that have set a over under on the total winning score, the Superbook, which is Westgate, one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world, they set it, I think, 23 and a half under par or something like that. I forget what the exact number is, but they're not looking good. Let's put it that way. Not looking good unless some weather shows up in a hurry. So the scoring's been very good. I wanted to share this data with you from Data Golf because I thought it was quite interesting. And this isn't full day data because they sent this 16 hours ago. So this was just through the morning wave, and then they wound up updating it in the end. But This was through the morning wave. 18 players had hit every fairway on the morning wave at El Cardinal, the previous high water mark since 2015 when they started keeping track of this data at Datagolf. Well, they have the data back then. They weren't around in 2015. Was 13 players at Trinity Forest in 2019. So we talked about that actually a little bit on my golf gambling podcast, The Press, that you would see a lot of comparable statistics to Trinity Forest, which hosted the AT&T Byron Nelson for a few years, because like El Cardinal, fairways were everywhere. The whole point of the course is width and angles. Same here, except they've got desert and ocean around it instead of a bus park in Dallas where they have Trinity Forest. So you knew the scores were going to be pretty low. You knew players were going to hit a lot of fairways. The only question was, could they make putts? And they did in mass. Here's a really telling statistic. Preston Summerhays hit every fairway, missed one green of 18, and he only beat six players in that morning wave. So he only beat, of the 66 players he played, he lost to 60 of them. Well, 59 of them. He's one of them. That's wild. So that tells you about the quality of this golf course, and it doesn't tell you about it's a bad golf course. It tells you about the quality of the difficulty. There's not much. Unless they put these pins in some really nasty places, which I guess they could consider doing. But this is a fall event, and it's the first year for the venue. They want it to look good, but you also don't want it to get beat up. So I'm kind of curious what the tour will do in response, particularly on the weekend, once they narrow the field down. We'll see what happens there. The final tally on the day, by the way, Datagolf did tweet this. 32 players hit all 14 fairways. So 100 players did not, 32 did. And I'd be curious to know how many actually hit 13 fairways on the day. And we can look that up here. It'll take a minute using ShotLink data, but just the volume of players who are just mashing it off the tee, there is actually a law of diminishing returns around the value of hitting fairways, and Datagolf has found that out to be a kind of 80% range. Like once the field basically is hitting 80% of fairways in a clip, there's really it doesn't really mean a whole lot to the player, because at that point they've hit all the fairways. So that's pretty interesting to me. It just is. It's a golf, we don't get this too often on the PGA Tour. Golf course that's new and just really easy. Trinity Forest is one of those, and this is the other in the last 4 years, 5 years, I suppose. But those courses are kind of hard to predict a winner. But we talked about it on the podcast that the most likely predictor was distance off the tee. Well, Cameron Percy's not a particularly long player. Michael Kim isn't. Camilla Vijayguss isn't. Nate Lashley isn't. Tanner Gooia isn't. Matt Kuchar sure isn't. So you've got some guys who are playing really, really well who are long hitters, and Cameron Young's one of them. Justin Suh's a little bit longer. But really, the longer hitters did not dominate yet, because apparently it's a pretty positional golf course. There are longer par fours and longer par fives, but if they're kind of trouble for everybody, then everyone kind of plays golf more or less the same way and becomes an iron contest. So it may not necessarily turn into a huge advantage for the distance hitter, but might just be a good course for everybody, which I think is fascinating. And we'll see what happens the rest of the way. But I wanted to point that out. That's the kind of statistical anomaly about El Cardinal, because if you're going to watch this at all this weekend, you're going to have an eye. Your first impression is going to be, wow, it's beautiful. And second of all, you go, wow, it's really easy. And yes, it is easy. But at a certain point, it becomes so easy that it takes some skill out of it. It invites a whole lot more types of players to be able to be competitive. So it's a weird way, kind of like Sawgrass, where it's that's so hard, everyone can win. It's the opposite kind of here. It's so easy, anyone can win. So it'll be a little bit, not of a sweepstakes kind of situation, but you're going to see a lot of birdies and eagles over the course of the week. All right, that's going to do it for us today. And for the week here on Two of the First, thanks so much for your support and spending some time with us. I appreciate it. If you listen on a podcast platform, let you do so. Leave a 5-star review and a comment. It helps us reach more people. We'll be back with more shows next week. We'll go over the results of this tournament, the Toto Japan Classic, the next leg of the PGA Tour Champions playoffs for the Charles Schwab Cup. We'll get into whatever other goofy stuff comes out because that's what we do on this show. And we'll have a smile on our face through it all. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.